Hello, and welcome to the Long Tales of Science podcast, where we interview women in high-performance computing about science, research, mentors, and career paths. I'm your host, Nicole Brewer. Okay, so welcome. Thanks for coming and meeting me here. So I will let you all introduce yourself, but thank you for volunteering your time here at SC22.
Thank you. So I am Rocío Carretera Sáez from Spain, from Universidad de Valladolid, and I'm currently an assistant professor.
So hello, good afternoon. I'm Bilal Hadri, computational scientist at the Gauss Supercomputing Collab, and I am the Reproducibility Initiative Chair for SC22.
Hi, my name is Lamai Weekly. I am a senior technical lead with the Research Applications team with Indiana University, and I am participating with the Reproducibility Challenge in the Student Cluster Competition and the special journal issue under the Reproducibility Initiative.
Wonderful. Thanks for coming. So today we're going to talk about the Reproducibility Committee, which you are all a part of in one way or another. The Reproducibility Committee has been around for a while, so if you all would like to start with explaining your roles and how that contributes to computational reproducibility in general.
To briefly summarize the effort of the reproducibility at SC, so this effort started since 2015. And it was led by Michaela Toffer. And at that time, there was if I recall correctly, one paper that has shared about the artifacts, kind of a brief description. And after 7 years now, it's quite a big committee with a lot of tasks. And so thanks to many efforts of all our predecessors. So now the Reproducibility Initiative has three subtracts: the artifacts, description and evaluation to award with the badges. We have also the journal issue submission that are reviewing the student challenge that have selected one of these apps. So that, and also, last but not least, one subcommittee for reproducibility challenge that they select a previous paper from the last year and they select it for the student challenge. So basically the effort spanned for over 3 years. And now what is new, since 2021, there is an award for the best paper.
This year I'm doing the special issue for the Reproducibility Initiative. So as Bilal was mentioning, this is the last leg of that three-year life cycle of a paper that goes into SC. So first, of course, when you submit a paper to SC because of the Reproducibility Initiative, you also have to submit an artifact descriptor, which will be evaluated, and then possibly get the badges, and then maybe in the end get an award, depending on what happens. Then once a paper gets submitted, the Reproducibility Challenge selects a paper from the previous year and creates tasks for the Student Cluster Competition to try to reproduce results that's seeing in their paper. So the full circle comes in with a special issue where we invite the best team, the top scoring reports from the previous student cluster competition, invite them to shepherd them into bringing their reports that they wrote on the floor into journal quality, and then inviting the author of that original paper to revisit their paper with a perspective of these results that the students saw and extend their paper, commenting on what the results of the paper saw. So that paper from 2 years ago finally sees its end with students actually working on it and trying to reproduce their stuff.
Yeah, so I'm co-chairing SC22 Artifact Documentation and Artifact Evaluation Committee this year. And I think this initiative has been focusing on evaluating all the technical paper artifacts provided so we can check if they are awarded with 1, 2, or 3 badges that respectively correspond to first badge, the artifact is available, so it has a DOI and it's accessible. Second one, it's functional, so you can download it, compile it, and use it. And third one, it's reproducible. It means that the results observed from the execution are those claimed in the paper they belong to.
Great. Thank you guys for that. And thank you for the history there. That, I feel like that's a really important start.
We just have to give the credit to the people who have created this initiative.
Yeah. So I guess I will introduce myself as well, just to give you a motivation for why I put this together. 1 year, I did the student cluster competition. I focused on the reproducibility challenge, and we got our paper accepted for the lovely journal. So that sort of started my inquiry around reproducibility. I think we spend a lot of time on just making sure things are well documented and that there, if somebody gets it, they can build it or run it again. But I think there's even more complex issues that we talk about less because they might not be a priority because we're just working on the basics right now. But I think there's also interesting issues like, at what point is reproducibility acceptable, or when is transparency acceptable? Because there are some things, especially in the HPC world, where it's just not feasible or for whatever reason. So I feel like it becomes a philosophical issue in a sense. So after being a research software engineer for several years, I went back to get my PhD in history and philosophy of science to sort of explore these issues. And I'm interested in researching standards related to reproducibility. So that's sort of my motivation for pulling this together.
There is also an important fact that over the years, how submission has improved. As like the team that has taken care of the artifact description and evaluation, we make life for reviewer easier because it's a lot of work. And so this year, like they made like almost like compulsory to have at least a container, so that for reviewing is at least we can check and validate some early result. And some of the reviewer will not be able to have access to some exotic software or hardware. So the container will be able to reproduce it from your laptop up to if they have access to a supercomputer. And of course, in a site, if they have a well-documented source or easy access, how they can download it. Because now the HPC world is like a village. And there are some people who do not have access to this privilege, I would say, resources. So with this transparent initiative, so the student anywhere in the world, they read the paper that interested, they can get the data, because sometimes we focus on the code, but also in the reproducibility, they make sure that the data, because it's not just to do like synthetic things. It's not about like HPC, like what we see here at the conference. Many tracks are towards science because you just don't do computation for doing other things. There is something, a goal behind. What is the problem you try to solve? So many, I would say, in biology or in climate, so you need the data. So how you will reproduce some result, because it's not, the reproducibility is not only about performance, but also some result.
I'll just say that it's not about open source code, but open science that involves everything. It's a collection of code, data, the logs, the way you can execute, the requirements, maybe an adjustment to your code so it can be used in a smaller environment. So it's the full collection of everything, yes.
These two, they helped a lot, and they went through the journey of starting as a reviewer and up to being chair, and that's why I selected them. But I'm just stating so that you can tell them their journey. So it will be nice to hear how they transition for being like a reviewer and up leading the effort. And I think for the last 3 years we have been there.
Yeah, for the reproducibility initiative, I started off with the Repro Challenge in 2019, just helping out with reviewing there, and then also in 2020 with reviewing and grading, and also helping out a little bit with a special issue in 2020. 2021, I chaired the Repro Challenge, so I got to actually have my hands on it and also work with the initiative when Carlos was the chair, and he was the one who really pushed for a lot of the ADAE initiative and bringing the award to light. And Anyo and Tanu, I can't remember their last names, but they really created a framework that Rosa and Rosi have built on of finding reviewers who will evaluate these artifacts and these artifact evaluations, finding people who will give access to seed machines or access machines at this point or other kinds of compute time so that they can evaluate these things. And it has been in the last 5 years. And the fact that the Repro Challenge has still become a flagship application in the challenge has been really incredible to see. I think especially with the award and it actually being called an award for behind SC has really been amazing. And yeah, as Bilal said before and as I've said, the ADAE, like, it is a lot of legwork in terms of what they do. It's really impressive to see.
So when we look at the 2015, that was like one paper that voluntarily like shared like the artifacts. And for SC22, we have over 37 papers awarded with the full badges. So this means like over 45% of paper with 3 badges, which is the best thing. So this is already a record. So every year people are submitting. And this time, we understand it takes time like to collect the data, to put like in a proper manner into a container. And what we did this year, and thanks to the previous year, before the SC submission, a couple of months ago, we did some training and we had like this seminar, because part of the reproducibility is also education. So how you can do it, because people, when they look at the container, they are scared. Okay, I can do it. And so what we did 3 seminars in the month of March, and they are all available on YouTube in the main site of SC22. And one was about like some tools like ECP, like how they can get this E4S. So this is how to you can get access easily to many software built, so you don't need to reinvent and how to figure out how I can install some libraries. Then we did another one with Chameleon team, so how to get access to some exotic hardware from basic CPU to the latest ARM, like the similar one like at the Fugaku. And last but not least, we had also a seminar with the Jetstream 2 people, so people can have access to larger resources. So that was like make also not only the life for the participant, the author for submitting paper, but also the reviewer. So the seminar was very beneficial to everyone.
Yeah, so that brings up a great point to go also back to the award. I think education is a really important part of making sure that people are able to do these things, but I think also we have to incentivize people. So whether it's the badging or the awards, these things all have to go together before they really before you reach your 40% with 3 badges, which is awesome. I love that. So what do you see in the future? Like what is the next step? What is the next piece of education or incentive or the next piece that continues this trend?
I think it's going to be a mix of providing good guidelines accessible to everyone, so everyone knows how to proceed. Either they want to reproduce or they want to make a reproducible contribution. And I also think it's a matter of all of us kind of force everyone to make the results accessible and their codes accessible, because it happens that unless there are legal issues that put a barrier, of course, unless that's the case, why, when you submit a paper, you don't make the code available so the reviewers need to trust your results? I mean, we live in an environment, an HPC environment, that provides you with all the necessary tools to share your code, right? So it's a matter of education, and also from the reviewer's perspective of the journals, the conferences, a matter of taking responsibility and kind of guiding everything through the mandatory of reproducible initiative, in my opinion.
So today for the reproducibility, I see one main challenge is the standards of the badges. Today, we have multiple badges award. So you have the ACM, which is one of the most major and most used. But you have also the IEEE, you have the open source. So which one? And each one has different criteria. And I think like the community, so we should ask some of our predecessor or into libraries, like what they did for MPI. So if you, like Jack Donguara said, like when they had the PVM, they had so many different libraries for the distributed communication, then they come up together and they said, we do the MPI standards. So I think like this is the next effort that the community, the leadership, come together with the editorial from ACM, IEEE, we are one family and toward a goal. how to make the standard. And so it will make easier the life for the author to submit something, and also for the reviewing and the people who try to reproduce the result. And hopefully how also in the long term, how we can make sure that this data stay forever.
I think that Rocio and Bilal hit a lot of the same things that I was going to say. One thing I'd like to add about the reproducibility initiative in SC proper is what they've described. One, they've been coming from the leadership down in terms of, hey, if you want to submit something, you have to provide this. And we have badges, and we will recognize you if you do this. So that's coming that from there and for the paper. So already there's that framework. And also that we will help you come to this by creating a framework where we will be evaluating this. And then the other part that I thought was really interesting was padding it from below, which it comes with a student cluster competition. By knowing that we have these students who will, like you, come into work in HPC or in computing or in the sciences. And with this, they not only have experience in the professional sense, but also because they're doing the reproducibility challenge, they're already thinking, why is reproducibility important? You know, what is good science? What does open science mean? And so there's that thing where you're coming up from who's going to be filling in our shoes when we're going to be retiring, and also from the people who are currently doing it, and also at the top level, making sure we recognize the people who are pushing this forward.
Yeah, that's all really great. I heard a couple things in there. I think that there's both, right, top down and bottom up. And I think you had also mentioned like a kind of a culture change in how we are incentivizing people to get this done. You had also mentioned how we talk about reproducibility, right? We have these three different badges. We have at least three different terms by which we speak of reproducibility. But there's also all the standards science-wide. And I feel personally like there is some disconnect between the way that we talked about reproducibility, how people outside computation talk about reproducibility. ACM switched theirs because there's different communities using different things. And so I wonder if you have any thoughts about the language surrounding reproducibility and what needs to happen there so that we're more productive, not just in our HPC world, but also when we come together and talk with like broader science, how we're having more productive communications there as well.
Well, Jack Dungara was saying yesterday that when they had in mind MPI, what they did was meeting, if I'm remembering correctly, each 6 weeks for 3 days. So they fully focused on that during that time. They said those things need to be solved, so let's figure out how to do it. So I think the best idea would be combine people from different levels, so maybe also from students to the highest levels in the hierarchy of big companies or big conferences, committees. So they put together their thoughts, their needs, their barriers they face, and it does not depend on a particular organization, but common thoughts put together scientific environment, let's say. That's my opinion.
Probably one thing to continue about the challenge that, as you said, reproducibility is like kind of more open science. But SC without the industrial or vendor cannot be done. So the next challenge is also how the industrial partner or vendor will be able to share things. So they were like nice paper, but unfortunately they were not able like to share full details about some codes, which we understand because this is a business, but there should be like a common ground, or this is probably a work, like how to standardize.
That's a really hard question to answer. And I guess CEO touched on this, which is bringing scientists and computational scientists, and also, as you mentioned, vendors together to understand the importance of what they're doing and how if you're going to simulate or use your HPC to do science or research that will then be peer reviewed, about how important that foundation is and without which we are on shaky ground with our results. Also an understanding where scientists have to understand that computation has a lot of barriers in front of it. In terms of sharing open science, there's the industry part, there's the heterogeneity of the hardware and the software that we're using. And that maybe does not come across as well in the scientific community. So I think that that maybe discussion might help.
I just want to add something that maybe it's not everything can be reproducible. So maybe we need to learn that there's open science on the one side and then company software on the other. I'm not saying they are enemies, but I'm saying they have different target, different group of users, and maybe we need to learn that they cannot coexist in the same field.
Yeah, so I agree. And I think there's also things to be like learned, right? There's absolutely two different needs there, but also there are maybe things that we can borrow from each other. So what comes to mind for me is, you know, you say, oh, well, industry has things they can't make available. Well, there are some science, like biosciences or whatever, where like we do have to either anonymize something or take other measures so things are both, you know, reproducible but protected people's privacy or whatever the issue is. So not all science can be open as much as we would love it to be. I guess unless you have anything else to add, I would transition into what your day jobs are and how you feel reproducibility comes up in them.
So I'm an assistant professor there in Spain, in Universidad de Valladolid, and I combine teaching with research in my position. So when it comes to teaching, I'm starting to force myself to make the students put their assignments through Git. I create a private Git repository, so I force them to use it and submit everything and try to update it each time they make a change, not only the last day, because that means you have done it in whichever way, so it's good to see the progress. And then on my research side, I did not realize, but I was lucky in the PhD because all the software I was using or the libraries I was using were open source. So let's say I learned about reproducibility when I needed it and I did not have it because I was so used to have it that I missed it when I lost it. And it was when I started working my research with fluid dynamic applications, because I've read more than 20, 30 papers that claim for certain results following specific paths. But I haven't been able to find their source code, I would say like more of 90% of the cases. So, and in some of them I found them, but it was not usable for different reasons. So that's what I'm facing right now. I want to compare my software with other existing softwares and it's being very difficult. So I wish I can contribute somehow with reproducible software and I can have other people do the same or follow the same path.
So my daily, I'm Bilal Hadwi, computational scientist at the Chaos Supercomputing Lab. And so my daily job is to make sure that our users are happy with the supercomputer Shaheen. So basically, to summarize it is the machine, the HPC system supercomputer, should work as expected when we purchased it and we accepted it. So it means performance, reliability, functionalities, and accuracy. So one thing like what we do, like time to time, we check that all components are working. So we don't want the user complaining. We want them all happy. And so time to time, we have to check and validate the result. So what does it mean? How we can reproduce the result? So we have, of course, codes, we have tests that are, some of them are open source, some are proprietary, but this is already shared by the team of computational scientists, but also with the sysadmins, and also with the on-site engineer. So that the day that I am in vacation, or I'm not here, or in conference, that don't wake up me at 2 a.m., okay, oh, Bilal, we need your help. And we have to keep some of historical data. So are we sustaining the same performance? And what will be the criteria of, is it okay? Or are we still, are we reaching a critical thing? So because over time, some performance may degrade. But sometimes also it may improve with the new software and so on. So we always think about code availability and so on, but also keeping the data, call data, and to see how over time it improves.
So at IU, I'm part of the applications team, so quite a bit of my job as well is keeping users happy and benchmarking machines for acceptance that we have. And I'll echo what Bilal says in terms of benchmarking and performance evaluation. That's something that, one, we want to see, like, let's say something happens in the hardware later on or something, some a user is coming in and saying, oh, suddenly I'm seeing performance degradation. It's so helpful to go back, let's say, to your old HPL runs before the acceptance, see your configuration file, see what you got then, and be able to, oh, I have that config file, I'm going to compile it again, or use that old binary that you compiled before and be able to test that. Another thing was when I first started my job with the applications team, a lot of what I was doing was doing analytics on data coming in from the systems in terms of usage, et cetera. And for that, that was like a team-based thing. So where something where if I'm writing the scripts that is pulling the data and doing analytics on it, if I move into another job, how can I make something that somebody can see what I did if I did something wrong, and improve on it, pull more data, et cetera. So I guess in that sense, reproducibility exists in my work. Another thing I'm thinking of is when working with users at IU, we get a mixed bag, and some of our researchers may not have heard of GitHub or are doing something perfectly fine on the systems, and then one day they bring the systems to a screeching halt and we ask them, what's changed? We don't see any changes in your job scripts. And they'll say, oh, I changed my code. It's like, oh, well, can I see what version you're doing here so I can make a comparison? And many times they'll say, oh, no, I made these changes and I've changed it already and I'm not using GitHub. And that is an opportunity to talk to them and say, well, it would be really helpful if you did something like this so that we could do this and we create that partnership. So yeah, another thing I thought about was in terms of institute to institute sharing. At one point, for example, we were bringing something, a service online that helped, gave a graphical interface to one of our machines, and we were implementing something to do the load balancing on that for when users came on since it was a shared resource. Later on, our dear rivals, I think you went to Purdue, is that correct? Yes. So our dear rivals in Purdue were also planning on bringing something, I think with the same product online that was similar, and they wanted to hear about what we were doing in the load balancing. And we were happy to share it, and I believe they've implemented it as well on their side. So in that sense, at Purdue, you know, sure, we'll fight it out on the field, but when it comes to science, it's really important to be able to share what you're doing.
Yeah, so I feel that this is also an important aspect of developing standards is that community development, right? Because it is not one size fit all as well. And so keeping those communications going really needs to be in the context of specific groups, which is really difficult, right? Yeah, to wrap up and summarize, I'd like to hear what reproducibility means to you. I think it typically goes beyond whatever we try to define it as. And I think that's actually a problematic way to go about defining it, is over-defining it. I think especially when we talk about this more broadly, it means a lot of different things, whether it's standards or some other components. What does reproducibility mean to you? Or what are you most passionate about going forward in terms of making reproducibility more accessible?
I think the word that comes to my mind when I think about reproducibility in general is a legacy, right? You're creating a legacy for whatever you're creating. You're creating something that future generations can build upon and make stronger. So if you have something that is reproducible, you know that the ground, the next person coming into this, is not shaky. It can hold water and they will be able to build that next step. And so it is a legacy. It's a human legacy.
For me, reproducibility is, I would try to define it with two words. It's availability towards sustainability. So that over generation, and so as, and basically she summarized it, Lomai, it will be so that we'll have a legacy. Without this, we'll not have reproducibility.
I would say honesty and honor, because if I had to explain, what Albert Einstein used to say, you'd know nothing about a field unless you are able to explain it to your grandma. So I would tell my grandma, you know, when we are at the school, they ask us to justify every answer. And then we get to publish papers where nothing is justified. So we're missing something.
There is a joke, like, everyone wants to get results faster and so on. So someone said in his resume, I'm very fast in calculus. So the interviewer was perplexed and said, what do you mean? Yes. Okay, you can test it, okay? So the interviewer said, what is 53 by 27? And the new applicant said, quickly, 128. It's wrong. Yes, but I told you I'm fast. I did not tell you, like, I will give you the right answer. So it's not a pro disability.
Yeah, please.
I just wanted to add something as I was listening to both Rusiu and Bilal talking about what they thought in general, which was, it's equitable. Having reproducibility makes equitable science. Being able to leave this, it gives anyone an idea of how they can do this.
Thank you guys so much for coming. I learned a lot. I think that last summary of what reproducibility is really explains how much of an important human issue this is, right? It really is very big, and you guys are doing a lot to forward the community. So thank you very much for coming today.
Thank you for sharing your enthusiasm. That gives us, okay, yes. We should continue, okay.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work, okay, you know, that's it. Because I know, like, some people want to try to bring this committee and say, no, it's too much work.
So, yeah. Until next time, I'm your host, Nicole Brewer, and it's been a true pleasure introducing you to amazing women in science, engineering, and technology.